Por favor, otro aplauso. Okay.
Hi. So I'm Jonathan Teuma from Gibraltar. I've been in Madrid for six and a half years now. Just got out of a class teaching a bit of English, anglicizing the folk over here, and heading home to get some rest and some lunch. What can I tell you? I've lived in, prior to Madrid, I've lived in the UK for about 6 years. I had a short stint in Angola, working for an NGO, Humana, People to People, working in AIDS awareness campaigns. Done a bit of backpacking, I went to Mexico, made my way down to Argentina, via land, air, rivers, and a bit of sea as well. And the moment, my main thing is the slam, the poetry slam. That's what I'm doing. I'm one of the organizers here in Madrid, also at a national level in Spain, and I've been working on that basically since I got to Madrid, and it's a bit of a passion, really.
Ballenas galácticas zarpando el universo, buscando señales, cuidando a sus crías. Ninguna de ellas tiene ni puñetera idea de quién es este poeta. Por favor, un gran aplauso para Miguelillo Mora.
My great grandfather, who I mentioned before, my grandmother's father, was from a small town called Atahate, up near Ronda, in the province of Malaga, or the region of Malaga. And he was a Mason, and for some reason, General Franco had it in for the Masons. He was also a barber, who, when the town was taken over by Franco forces, refused to humiliate the women of the town by cutting their hair short, as the military demanded. And probably an amalgamation of factors such as this led to him getting word that he was going to be arrested. So he decided to flee. He gave word all around the town that he was going to Ronda, which is about, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 kilometers to the north of Atahate, to pay a debt he had, and instead went south to La Línea, where he had some family, with the objective of crossing over to Gib. Of course, by this time, all of Andalusia was controlled by Franco's forces, and of course the border with Gibraltar too, so he couldn't simply cross. So he had to wait. There was a fisherman in La Línea who was taking refugees over clandestinely in his boat. He'd leave them on a buoy, on one of these big concrete buoys, and somebody from Gibraltar would pick them up. By the time my great granddad got there, Manuel, he was called, the war had been going on for a while, and this fisherman kind of wanted to pull back and not do it. So it meant that he had to hide away in cupboards and small rooms for months. In La Línea, there were many houses there'd be a courtyard surrounded by little one-room houses, where basically the kitchen, bedroom, and everything else was in one. But they were interconnected, so he'd hide and jump from one to the other when word came that somebody was coming to look for him. Eventually, they made contact with the fisherman who didn't want to take him. He wanted to pull out of taking people because it was a dangerous activity. And my great-granddad's wife, who wasn't going to have it, threatened to rat him out. You know, she was afraid. By this time, actually, by this time, my great-granddad had already been convicted in a military court without his presence to 25 years imprisonment for his crimes, whatever they were supposed to be. So she, in a fit of desperation, threatened to rat him out, basically, and so the fisherman agreed. And so it was that one night they went out, he left him on the buoy. And for whatever reason, it took about 3 days for him to be picked up. It's never been made clear to me, but for 3 days he just sat under the sun in the middle of the Bay of Gibraltar, Straits of Gibraltar, and waited until finally, without word from anyone, until finally a local policeman acting off duty went and picked him up and took him to Gibraltar. And that was the last he saw of Spain. He never went back. He settled in Gib and stayed there. I mean, Gibraltar itself was divided, you know, much like Spain, with the military, the Admiralty and upper commercial merchant classes backing the nationalists, and the working class backing and taking in and trying to help as much with the Republican side. And my granddad grew up in the midst of all of this. I mean, when this was civil war, he would have been living in Gibraltar. Most Gibraltarians went back. Straight after that, it was the Second World War, and the local population got evacuated. My granddad and his brother and sisters and my great grandmother were initially sent to Casablanca, although they had to return after a few weeks or perhaps a couple of months when France capitulated to Germany. From there they were going to be sent over to the UK, to London probably, or Northern Ireland perhaps, but my great granddad was afraid of the U-boats and decided to send his kids and wife up to the family town of Atahate, up in Ronda. And so my granddad spent most of the Second World War there, really breathing in the post-war atmosphere, learning of secret meetings from given to kids by an old communist lady who would take them into the countryside and tell them stories of the Republic. And he really lived and breathed this for many years. So by the time he came back to Gib and joined the workforce and then joined the Spanish refugees who have their tertulias in the bars, you know, he was ready for action. So by the time he got his first car, first thing he did with it was to smuggle over some anti-fascist propaganda into Spain. He did this, from what he tells me, for quite a while, you know. It wasn't overly dangerous being a British citizen, even though you wouldn't say it from listening to him, but he had some cover, you know. It wasn't as easy to beat up a British citizen as a Spanish worker. He received these magazines from London or elsewhere, or perhaps some of them might have even been printed locally, and hid them in the car somewhere, and would take them and drop them off at a Barbay train station, from where they'd be distributed all over, well, at least that train's route. And yeah, and he did this for quite a while until there was a close shave one time when the police came in, started asking questions. Again, he played the British card, I gotta say, and got out of there. When they got a bit cocky, he just let them know he wasn't local, and they kind of backed off, and he got out of there, and that was that for a while. But then, of course, he continued his actions in Gib and his activism in Gibraltar for many years, until eventually he became, as I said before, 1972, the secretary, general secretary of the TGWU, and organized the strike. The local government was taken out of the way, and negotiations started to take place directly with the governor. He called my grandfather and the executive team from the union in, and basically threatened that if the strike did not stop, they would bring in the military in order to man the generating station. This was a key point. As I said before, Gibraltar imported all of its food from quite far away, because the border was closed with Spain, so we had to bring it over from Morocco, which meant there wasn't a steady stream, and food had to be kept in refrigerators. If the generating station was not working for more than a day or two, you know, a lot of food would go to waste. And this was a strong gambling point. The engineers at the generating station had stayed on for a couple of days, but couldn't hold on to it themselves without the workforce. And so the response from the union was that, well, if you are going to bring the military in, this is now a general strike. And they called in the rest of the population, who responded positively. Shops closed, the rubbish wasn't collected, hospitals only ran basic services, teachers were on strike, everybody was out on the street for the remaining 3 days. And my granddad was at the head of this. He was, every other day, I remember there'd be power cuts due to strikes, and following that, I'd be watching my granddad on TV giving an interview explaining why. And at the end of the week, they finally came to an agreement. The initial pay offer at the beginning of the strike, which actually sparked the whole thing off, was of about a pay rise of about 47 pence a week, a month. By the end of the 5 days, this had gone up to an interim offer of about £5.27, pending further negotiations and what would eventually lead to parity of wages and working conditions between all workers, for all workers in the world.
Ulysses flies a spacecraft around the universe. The age of information, the swap of countless truths and affirmations for really, really harmful speculations. Wait a minute. Time cut.
Through his words and through his example, he has influenced me and the rest of my family, my uncles. I think my father actually is the one who's taught me to be more diplomatic and perhaps weigh things out more, not so extreme in action, which is perhaps where I get a different kind of shade to my politics. But having said that, yes, the rest of them have squarely put me on the left.
And does your poetry reflect this?
Totally, yes. Yes, I mean, my poetry, on the most part, is a look at what's around me, and digestion, a mental digestion of what's around me, and a comment, I suppose, on it. A comment which is impregnated or rich in a leftist background. I am confused by the age of information, where T.S. Eliot has tea and cakes and ices with Super Mario, and Shakespeare casts Mickey Mouse, and Ulysses flies a spacecraft round the universe. The age of information, the swap of countless truths and affirmations for really, really harmful speculations. The end of the question mark, because we all know that the glaciers are melting and the forests are not growing anymore. The constant round and round tumble of the washing machine, the reduction of the worldwide green, the man-made mutation of the sweet, sweet green, no longer dream machine, but anesthetic. The great métissage coming in a little too late for all of us Afro-Latin, Native American, Occidental love children with a European mother and a dad from God knows where. We got the finger on the wrong button. Million channels leading nowhere but dumb. The quiz shows with no knowledge, the deaths with no lives preceding the bored, bored children and lost imaginations, the oil-slick beaches and dream date combinations of our interneted regulations. The age of information. And I am confused. Because Janis Joplin just tried to sell me a car, and though I know it was not her soul riding that ad, it is my soul that writhes with impotence till another hit of anesthetic green can calm my nerves and will to fight another day. The age of consternation, but no one sees the wood because we have cut down all the trees to lie and sit upon, and the price we pay is air, which is why no one cares, because air was always free. And Don Juan dates Hannah Montana, and Cleopatra loves desperate housewives, and pageless books are filled with faces of people whom I do not even know, and yet they are my friends. All these qualifications that we have made to hang up on the wall and say, oh, aren't I smart, aren't I accomplished. Now I can get a job and sacrifice my life to another man's dream, to another man's desire, to another man's greed. Give me more information and remember to buy pads for your girlfriend and porn for your frustration. Hit them where it hurts and don't ask if they like it. Shoot first and shoot later. Questions are no use because we got the information. We just need to sort it, organize it, send an alphabetical order, color code, and subdivide it with post-its. Don't forget the highlighter for the truth and run it by me through my mobile email while I talk to your mama on the Skype. Man, she's good. Your ma, the truth, the mail, the porn, the love of it all. Of all that we find on the net, of all that we use on the net. Because this is definitely the age, the time, the era that seduced our minds with pointless information. Left, motherfucker.